We have some items left over from this morning's calendar, so bear with us. We're going to try to get through those in fairly short order, and then we'll get to this afternoon's items. So we have item number 477, I think, is one of those. Carla?
Yes.
Joe, what were your other ones? Joe, what were the other ones? The other ones you wanted?
What?
The other ones you wanted?
479 and 480.
Okay, you might not be able to get to those because staff's not here, but let's do 477 and then we'll see where we are.
Okay, a roll call first.
Oh, sorry, yes, roll call, please.
Fish? Here. Saltzman? Novick?
Here.
Fritz?
Here.
Hales?
Here.
477. Pay claim of Clifford Richardson in the sum of $35,000 involving the Police Bureau.
Okay. There's someone that wanted to testify on this item?
Dan Handelman and Joe Walsh.
Come on up.
Come on in.
Yes. Yeah.
Good afternoon, Mr. Mayor and members of council. Thank you for taking this item at the beginning of this afternoon's agenda. I'm Dan Handelman with Portland Cop Watch, and I'm here to testify on this item because it has to do with a settlement being paid to a person who was apparently brutalized by the police at an anti-police brutality protest. Portland Cop Watch is a group that promotes police accountability. We were not involved in organizing this demonstration, but that doesn't mean that even though we weren't part of it or that we may not have agreed with all the tactics that were used, that we feel that's appropriate for people to be harmed by the police engaging in their First Amendment rights. And since there's nobody here from your staff to read this into the record, the background paragraph in the paperwork says that in March 2010, Clifford Richardson was a participant in what is referred to in this document as an anti-police protest and marched in the streets downtown. There was a strong police presence, including the use of police bike squad to manage and control the movement of protesters. Several hours into the non-permitted march, a line of officers formed a picket line with their bikes to keep protesters from moving onto the street. Mr. Richardson was at the front of the line of protesters just off the sidewalk. At one point, Richardson pushed at an officer, and officers moved in to take him into custody. During the struggle that ensued, and this is my favorite part because it's in passive voice, Richardson's upper body was struck by a police officer's knee, and as a result, his head and face struck the pavement. A TV news cameraman captured most of us on videotape. Richardson was transported to OHSU for his facial injuries. So here's another instance with money being paid out for violence being done by the police. And I think there's assumptions that are made sometimes based on people's the way they dress or at certain protests. I talked last week at Race Talks about profiling, racial profiling, but there's just as pernicious political profiling that goes on with people who are dressed up in black. They're referred to as anarchists, even though their political persuasion is not necessarily known. And anarchism is not necessarily associated with violence. Somebody on the mayor's staff referred to a protest that was going to take place March 15th this year as a riot when the police were gearing up for it, and there was no incidents to speak of that were anything like that. And then when there was something on May Day, an unpermitted march on May Day, that same actual staff person said nothing happened when there was no police action, but in fact people exercised their First Amendment rights, apparently walked across the street from Terry Schrunk to the police station and made the shortest march in history. So I just want to caution against political profiling. I want to remind the people listening that our tax money is being paid out in these incidents. That earlier this year, I talked about how a lot of these payments are happening in judgments instead of settlements, so they don't come before city council. I'm glad this is a settlement, and we're able to discuss this in open forum. There's no way to know whether the officer in question was disciplined for this because of the way our system works, and we hope that that will be changed. And I guess that's the end of my 3 minutes.
All right. Thank you very much. Thanks.
My name is Joe Walsh, and I represent Individuals for Justice. We here to support the Cop Watch position on this. And we wonder out loud if it's not a good idea for you to invite maybe Dan in on some information. You'll have to decide what information that available to Cop Watch. But it seems to me that when we read that there's a settlement of $35,000, and what Dan said is very accurate, we have great concern about our police department. The Department of Justice has great concern about our police department. A federal judge has great concern about their behavior. But yet, there are very few organizations that are invited in to find out if you're going to pay out $35,000 of our money, not yours, ours. Somebody should be told what happened to the police officer. If you want to keep his identity secret, that's fine. I don't have a problem with that. But we have to have accountability here, folks. You're using my money to pay off a victim, and nothing happens to the police department. They keep walking free. It's got to stop. So I'm here to support Cop Watch.
Okay, thank you. Thanks very much. Anyone else want to testify on these? Then this is an emergency ordinance. Let's take a roll call.
Fish.
I appreciate the testimony, and it gives us no pleasure to pass on these pay claims. I do note from the file that the claim against the city was $500,000 in general damages and $15,000 in medical bills, and the recommendation through mediation is that we resolve this case for $35,000. I look forward to the day when we don't have pay claims, that we don't have claims of this nature that we pay out. The question before us today, Mayor, is this a prudent settlement in light of our risk? It seems to me it is on its face, and so I will vote aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. Thank you. Okay. I don't believe we have staff here. Is that correct, Carla?
Correct.
Or do now have staff here?
Oh, I'm sorry. Christine's here.
Come on up. Why don't you read those two items, please?
478, authorize a 4-year contract with Wells Fargo Bank, N.A., to provide banking services for a not-to-exceed amount of $550,000. And 479, authorize a 4-year contract with U.S. Bank Government Banking to provide merchant bank card services for a not-to-exceed amount of $10,524,000.
Hey, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor. Christine Moody, Procurement Services. On October 18, 2012, a request for proposals was issued for general banking services and merchant bank card services. To maximize competition and encourage local participation in the solicitation process as required by the responsible banking resolution, the RFP requested separate proposals for each of these services rather than a combined contract for both. On November 29th, the city received 5 proposals for the general banking services category and 7 proposals for the merchant bank card services category. The proposals were reviewed, evaluated, and scored by 2 separate evaluation committees for each category of service. Each committee included a minority evaluator. The evaluation committee's determination that Wells Fargo Bank was the highest scoring proposal for general banking services and that U.S. Bank Government Banking was the highest scoring proposal for merchant bank card services. I am recommending that Council award a 4-year contract with Wells Fargo Bank for a not-to-exceed amount of $550,000 and a 4-year contract with U.S. Bank Government Banking for a not-to-exceed amount of $10,524,000. At this point, I will turn it over to Jennifer Cooperman, the City Treasurer, to talk more specifically about these contracts and what services will be provided to the city.
Good afternoon. Thank you. As Christine just mentioned, the genesis of these contracts was Council's adoption last May of the city's responsible banking resolution. That resolution addressed 2 items regarding the contracting process for the city's banking services, and it asked the treasurer to work collaboratively with procurement to maximize competition for and encourage local participation in the contracting process and to research best practices, national best practices on responsible banking, including and to include metrics on other aspects of bank operations in the RFP selection criteria. As background, the city uses 2 types of corporate banking services. The first I'll call general banking. These are the city's transaction accounts for our cash management. These are bank accounts that we use for making disbursements to pay payroll, to pay accounts payable. There are also accounts that where we receive payments from users of the many city services that we offer, parking meter payments, water, sewer, utility charges, permit sales, et cetera. The second type of service is merchant bank card, and this is the processing of credit and debit card payments that people, again, use to pay for utility bills, et cetera. To maximize the competitiveness and to encourage local participation, we took these services, which for years had been bundled together, and we split them. And we gave vendors the opportunity to bid on one or both of those services. As Christine mentioned, we set up two separate evaluation panels. We had representation from various city bureaus. We included a minority evaluator participant from outside the city. And I'll mention in our research of best practices, we identified a handful of other cities who have tried to address these metrics by focusing not on their transactional accounts and their operational banking, but more on their depository relationships and where they place their investment money when they're using banks to do that. So regarding metrics on other aspects of bank operations, we added to the already existing 15-point corporate responsibility section of the city's RFP process a new 5-point section which addressed issues specific to the Portland metropolitan area and asked vendors to come back to us with data, again, specific to the Portland area on employee compensation, economic development programs, home ownership and foreclosure programs, programs for the underbanked and the non-banked, et cetera. We received more responses in 2012 than we did in 2008, so I think our approach was a positive one, and we got a more competitive response pool. Let's see. At the end of the evaluation process, we've identified our banking services for Wells Fargo, who currently provides them, and we awarded the merchant bank card to U.S. Bank. I would point out on the $10.524 million for the merchant services, the vast majority of those fees are going to go to Visa, MasterCard, the card networks, and the banks that issue credit cards that people carry around. They're not directed to U.S. Bank. And I would also point out on the banking fees, we are working to educate city staff on the relative costs of the banking services that we all use and how they can go about minimizing them so that rather than getting a paycheck, it is more efficient for the city to use direct deposit. If we have a choice of paying a vendor via ACH rather than paying them with a wire, we can reduce our overall banking fees. So that's what these contracts are in relation to. We have, if you would like, we have Michael Hodge from U.S. Bank. We have Mark Hudspeth from Wells Fargo, who are both available to answer any questions that you might have.
Great. Thank you both. Any questions for staff or our two selected banks?
Jennifer, I believe I heard from you the other day that our cost per credit card transaction is going to go down significantly from our last contract. Is that correct?
That is correct. The city processes about 8 million credit card transactions per year, everything from people using a credit card to pay a 40-cent parking meter to paying their water bill to a large permit. We're currently paying 4.1 cents per transaction, and that will be reduced to 2.25 cents per transaction. So we're anticipating a savings, keeping volume constant, of about $150,000 a year.
Nice.
Very nice.
Good. Other questions?
Please.
Yes.
So I don't have to be persuaded to do direct deposit. I already have it.
And thank you.
I would say to anyone who doesn't have it at the city, it's very convenient. It just shows up in my account, usually the right amount. So, I mean, I'm not even. Jennifer, thank you for the way you've approached this process. And I particularly appreciate the additional corporate responsibility components that you wove into the RFP. And I know that from the report you gave me that not every applicant sees the opportunity to tell their story the way these two did, and I appreciate that they both played by the rules and then showcased some of the work they're doing in our community. And congratulations to both of you. But the follow-up piece, I think, for the council is to take this theme that started with responsible banking and that has continued through what you call the corporate responsibility through to metrics and figure out how we can track this on a more systematic basis. And since I don't know what the answer is, I was just going to suggest, hopefully with the mayor's concurrence, that over the next 6 months, you take a look at some of the best practices that are out there and come back and tell us how might we, in effect, develop a program for monitoring these things going forward, mm-hmm. not just perhaps starting with our bank partners, but then seeing how that might migrate. Mm-hmm. What does that look like, and how do other cities set up these things? And it seems to me we've made such progress in our RFP, how might we now have something that's more systematic? So we quantify what is that corporate responsibility piece, how do we evaluate it, and then how do we report it?
I'd be happy to.
If I may add to that, I think one thing that might be interesting for us to explore over the next few years before we do this again is whether there's interest in some other progressive cities in talking about a collective approach where we agree here's certain social responsibility actions we'd like to see happen, and if the cities developed said, here's what we're going to prioritize so that, you know, all of us will say that 10% of our criteria will be X, then we might have a bigger impact than each of us doing our own thing. And, I mean, obviously these contracts necessarily have to be for a while. We have some time to explore that, but I think it would be great if you, Jennifer, could find the time to have some of those conversations with other cities wrestling with the same mm-hmm. ideas.
I look forward to having feedback for you about what we can put together.
Since the ordinance for Wells Fargo actually in paragraph 2 has some of that Portland-specific data that you alluded to.
Mm-hmm.
So we have sort of the outline of some of these metrics. Mm-hmm.
Metrics.
Do you think 6 months is enough time for you to come back with just a first cut of what your thinking is?
That's a very reasonable time.
Thank you. And I don't want this to in any way take away from the two banks that have been selected for our services, and I can say that in my role over the last few years as housing commissioner, I've always been struck by the fact that how often Wells Fargo or U.S. Bank or both showed up at a closing as a funder for something the community cared about. So we deeply appreciate that, and what we are trying to do is build on a more formal way of tracking what does corporate responsibility mean when we're mm-hmm. investing public dollars. And how do we use this process to encourage others to participate at the same high level? So thank you.
Welcome. Thank you all. Any further comments from anyone on the panel? I know you're here to answer questions, but
I just want to say thank you to the city.
Put
I thank
your
you
name
for,
in the record.
I apologize. My name is Michael Hodge. I'm from U.S. Bank. I want to say thank you for the opportunity to participate in this program or this process. I've been doing this nearly 20 years now, and I can say that it has become a very common practice for public sector entities to look at services distinctly different and look at banking services and merchant services. I think that's a wise decision. I think that gives a very competitive analysis, and it gives an opportunity to meet the expectations of the client. So we appreciate that opportunity.
Thank you.
Hi, Mark Hudspeth with Wells Fargo. I'd like to just, again, thank the city as well. I can say that the process of the RFP was one of the most thorough I've seen in the last 10 years, and so we're honored to be selected under that such scrutiny, if you will. But also, we are part of the community here locally. We support it, as Commissioner Fish pointed out, and so we're honored to continue that relationship that we've had in the past. So thank you very much. We appreciate it.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Very much.
Mr. Mayor, may I ask Jennifer one last question?
Sure.
There was a push under the last administration to do some of our banking with credit unions or smaller local banks. Mm-hmm. It's my understanding that for the services we're talking about today, we actually did not get any responses to the RFP from credit unions or small local banks. Is that right?
That's correct. The services, the corporate banking transaction services that we use. We did have a respondent who, for several of those services, was not able to provide them. There's a certain level of corporate banking wherewithal to provide the services that we require.
But we are continuing to distribute some of our deposits.
On the deposit side, yeah. The investment side, rather than purchase an additional agency security or treasury bill, we have expanded our use of the local depository network for placing our deposits, yes.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Do we have others signed up to testify on this item?
Just Mr. Walsh.
Okay.
My name is Joe Walsh, and I represent Individuals for Justice. Commissioner Novick and I, from time to time, think along the same lines. It's rare, but we do. My concern is with Wells Fargo. I don't know a lot about U.S. Bank, so my comments will be on Wells Fargo. There is a phenomenon that's going on right now that banks, corporations, like Nike, that we all love, put a lot of money in the billions down in the Caribbean, Cayman Islands. Since I have two lawyers on the panel, I don't want to mislead you. It is not illegal to do that. You can take your money and put it down in the Cayman Islands and not pay taxes on it. Here's the problem. Wells Fargo has billions of dollars sitting in the Cayman Islands, and they don't pay taxes on it. What does that mean? It means, Mayor, that you pull your hair out trying to figure out where you're going to get the money, because it comes from the federal government to the state, to the county, to you. And if corporations are allowed to do what Wells Fargo and Nike is doing, you're always going to have a deficit, always, because it's a great idea if you're a corporate CEO. More money you put down there, less taxes you pay. Who picks up the bill? I do, you do. All the people that make the least amount of money, you read it in the papers all the time. Why in God's name would you give this bank any of our money? You can't find a bank that is responsible. You talked about responsibility. You're there. Look a little further. Don't look just on the borders of Portland. Look on the borders of the Cayman Islands. Wells Fargo is a huge corporation. And they just pour the money down there. And they don't pay taxes there, Commissioner Fish. They don't pay taxes. So when you want to build something, the money's not there. So when you take responsibility, it is not against the law, because we have a Congress that has gone insane. Totally insane. That's why they're getting away with it. But someday, somewhere, somehow, there will be a congressman that will join Bernie Sanders and say, enough. That's it. These people will be in jail. You won't be honoring them. You won't be saying, you did a great job stealing our money. Don't do this. Don't do this.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay. Then let's take a roll call, please.
479? Or
yes, we'll take them in order. Rather. Yeah.
Fish?
I'm sorry.
478.
478.
First. Yeah.
So Wells Fargo.
Yes.
Okay. To Christine Moody and Jennifer Cooperman and the whole team, thank you very much. Where'd they go? Well, there they are. Thanks for a great job, and really appreciate the briefings you gave the council offices, and I sleep better at night knowing Jennifer is watching over our finances. to our friends at Wells Fargo, I know Bernie Kronberger is here. I didn't see Kobe Jackson, but the whole family of folks, I appreciate, in addition to this contract where you are providing services to the city, I appreciate the services you provide every day when you step up and support our community. From funding affordable housing during the worst recession in our lifetime to being the first to write a check to support a festival or a concert series or a youth program, you're always there, and I appreciate that. To me, that's part of being a good corporate citizen, and what we're going to be doing over the next 6 months is expanding that definition to include some other criteria that we can track. But we are proud of this relationship and pleased that you scored well, and I'm pleased to vote aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
Thank you for your good work. I agree with Commissioner Fish that Jennifer Cooperman's doing a great job of helping us watch over our city's money. And, of course, Christine Moody has been setting high standards for some time now. I appreciate that this started under Mayor Sam Adams and was informed by some good thinking from former State Representative Jefferson Smith. So it's particularly good to see Mayor Hales bringing it forward in acknowledgement that sometimes we disagree with some folks on some things, but then we move forward together on things that we all agree are good things to do. The separation of these contracts did result in two companies being providers, which is good. And it did give the opportunity for local smaller banks to compete. And so that's obviously something that we need to continue working on, but this is two institutions that have done good work for the city, and it's cost effective for the citizens. Aye.
Hales.
I spent much of the last 10 years competing in RFPs against other companies to do work for various public agencies around the country. And I found it particularly energizing for me as a competitor when a government was particularly clear about what it wanted, wrote down good criteria, and then followed its own rules for how it conducted a competitive process. And that's exactly what we've done in this case, written down good criteria about what we expect in terms of corporate responsibility and sound banking, and the competition took place, and good process yielded a good result. Thank you very much. Aye. Okay. Thanks for your patience. I think we are one more item before we finish.
Roll call on 479.
Oh, sorry. We got to do the second one. Ha! Only finish the process.
Fish?
Oh, wait. Would someone remind me which tower is taller? I want to get a competition here. Right?
Talk about an even playing field.
A semantic distinction. Okay, thank you. For all the
reasons I mentioned before, pleased to support this ordinance. Aye.
Novick?
I just have to say that whenever I see the U.S. Bank building, I think of Bob Dylan because of the music from Big Pink. Aye.
Fritz?
That was a nice riddle. We are higher, but they are taller. I hope I can figure it out. Aye.
Hales.
The world is not flat. That's how.
That's what I was thinking.
Aye. Thank you all. Okay, now we'll move to the afternoon agenda, please.
The 2 p.m. time certain?
Yes.
Okay. Item 481, extend a street closure pilot program in the Old Town Entertainment Districts through parts of Northwest 2nd, 3rd, and 4th Avenues between West Burnside and Northwest Everett on certain days and during certain hours.
So before I call a panel up here to present the proposal in front of us, let me set a little bit of the context here for this. Last year, under Mayor Adams, the council adopted an ordinance that said for 90 days, let's try an experiment that was recommended by Commander Day and close streets in the Old Town Entertainment District as a way to make it safer and better managed for the whole community. That ordinance was primarily driven by a high volume of calls to Central Precinct for service in the area. As you'll hear, as an experiment, this is a success. It's reduced the amount of crime and the seriousness of crime that we've been experiencing in the district. That 90-day period was coming to a close. I made a decision that it would not be smart to stop and then restart this effort if that's what the council wants to do. And so I've spent a considerable amount of time along with staff from my office and from bureaus that you'll be hearing from looking into this issue. Other members of the council have done a lot of homework on this subject as well. So we're at a point of inflection here where we're looking at what has been accomplished and what has worked, and then looking forward to say, what can we do to further evaluate the effectiveness of this idea, refine it, and if that's the right decision, carry it forward as an ongoing program rather than simply as a pilot project. So that's the point that we've arrived at. Let me call Chad and the rest of the group up to walk us through their report and the proposal in front of us. Good afternoon, team.
Good afternoon, Mayor Hills, City Commissioners. My name is Chad Stover. I'm a policy assistant on the mayor's staff, and I work mostly in the area of public safety. And also, I work in international affairs, and I wear a number of other hats in our office. And in this particular project, I'm speaking more along the lines of neighborhood involvement. And as the mayor pointed out, back in December under Mayor Adams, there was a 90-day street closure that passed through City Council down in the Old Town Chinatown neighborhood. And to start off, first of all, we have a panel of experts that are up here that are going to speak on behalf of some of the key components of this project. Sarah Schooley's here from Portland Bureau of Transportation, Commander Bob Day from Central Precinct of the Portland Police Bureau, and Mike Boyer's here from Crime Prevention of the Office of Neighborhood Involvement. But to start off, I thought I would just set the tone by providing a little bit of a context for the area, some notes to take into consideration around the Old Town Chinatown neighborhood. This is the home to many different businesses, many different folks living in the area, such as the Lansu. We have the Lansu Chinese Garden, which opened up in 2000, Oregon Nikkei Legacy Center, the Chinese Consolidated Benevolent Association, Northwest Health Foundation, Northwest Natural, and Oregon Department of Transportation, among a number of different restaurants, such as Alexis Greek Restaurant, Old Town Pizza, Davis Street Tavern, Floyd's Coffee Shop, Boiler Room, Hobo's Restaurant, and a number of others. I think one key component to note from the onset is the diversity of this area. It's particularly unique in that, addition to the many flourishing businesses that I just mentioned, the rich historical and cultural significance brought by the Chinese and Japanese communities, and a lively nightlife that has organically emerged in the area, particularly on weekend evenings, while there are also numerous social service providers such as Central City Concern, the Union Gospel Mission, the Blanchet House, are all neighbors to these businesses, not to mention the many private citizens who may not necessarily identify with any one of these groups, but are nevertheless impacted by their daily lives by the happenings of this area. Over the years, one specific area within the Old Town Chinatown Neighborhood Association, neighborhood, specifically the area on Northwest 3rd between West Burnside and Northwest Everett and on Northwest Cooch from Northwest 2nd to Northwest 4th and Northwest Davis from Northwest 2nd to Northwest 4th, has been commonly referred to as Portland's entertainment district. So on Friday and Saturday nights, we see a large influx of young folks, mainly 18 to 25-year-olds, roughly, come in and number in the thousands in this particular area. So it's become quite busy. And as the mayor pointed out, due to the increase in calls for public safety, that's what resulted in the initial pilot program street closure that started back in December. As Mayor Hales came into office, the street closure was already in progress, and we were confronted with the fact that this was coming to a closure, and this sparked our interest, and the mayor wanted to take a look at the entertainment district himself and talk to the stakeholders involved. We held three town hall meetings with bar owners, Old Town Chinatown Community Association members, business owners, social service providers, the Chinese community, and neighbors. Each of these town hall meetings were well attended. We had lively discussions about improvements to the area, whether they liked the street closure itself, and that led to further discussions about the neighborhood overall and some of the things that they would like to see happen in the future. The mayor also participated on two late-night walkabouts that started from either 11 p.m. or midnight and ended up at 2 to 3 a.m., and we were fortunate to have Commissioner Fritz accompany us on the second walkabout. And one of the reasons that we wanted to participate, that the mayor wanted to participate in these walkabouts, is to see what life is like firsthand inside the entertainment district on a typical Friday or Saturday night, where we see large populations at the bars, as well as some of the points of concern that we had heard not only from the police but also from the bar owners and from the residents, some problematic areas, which Commander Day will probably mention in his presentation, both during and after the business hours late at night. We heard during the town hall meetings a number of concerns from neighbors, from bar owners, from other stakeholders in the area about the street closure and about the neighborhood as a whole. And after all of these meetings that we've had together and working together with our task force, with PBOT and with ONI and with the Portland Police Bureau, we came to the conclusion that one thing that we learned from all of these discussions is that all of the stakeholders are incredibly committed to wanting to improve the neighborhood. And this led us to believe that the idea of moving forward with experimenting with different ways to make improvements is something that everybody was interested in. And so in this particular ordinance, we are suggesting that we move forward for 5 to 6 months. It would end on October 27th with the street closure. And during that time, explore some of the points of concern that were raised by the stakeholders themselves. And I'll just name a few that came up repeatedly in some of the meetings that we had. Sarah Schooley will speak on behalf of parking in a moment. But one thing that they wanted to see was an improvement in the signage and education pertaining to the street closure as well as parking enforcement. So we have an issue where metered parking stops at 7 p.m. There's a three-hour gap where it's sort of a free-for-all in that area. And then at 10 p.m., the street closure kicks in again. And this can be misleading for some because they come down maybe for dinner and they're there when there's no metered parking. But the street closure hasn't kicked in yet, and so they're taken aback when they find out that they have to get out of the area at 10 p.m. And so if we could find some way to help educate people who are coming down into that area or improve the signage or both, that's something that we would like to look into during this next extended period. Another thing that we want to look into is finding innovative ways to improve the aesthetic appearance of the street closure itself. Some of the business owners, bar owners, they expressed frustration that they didn't like the way that it looked. And, of course, we did this as a pilot program just to see where it was, so nothing permanent was put into place. But if we got to the point where we could make this into a permanent closure, if that's what is decided, then perhaps we can look into ways to where we could make it more aesthetically appealing. And ONI has done some research in other entertainment districts in different cities across the country that have some nice ideas that are worth exploring there. Another point that we'd like to look into is the possibility of establishing a nonprofit organization assigned with the task of overseeing the street closure of the entertainment district and the area as a whole. And then a fourth area that is compelling is to look for ways to develop ongoing sources of revenue to help cover the costs of services associated with the management of the district and the street closure. And that's what brings us here today. So again, in my experiences working on this project, great collaboration with the community, great turnout at all of the town hall meetings. No question that this particular neighborhood is interested in exploring ideas, and that's what we bring to the table this afternoon. With that, I will turn it over to Commander Day to talk a little bit about public safety.
Thank you, Jed. I'm Bob Day, Commander, Central Precinct. First of all, I'd like to thank both Commissioner Fish and Commissioner Fritz, who were here in the last time I spoke back in December and gave, as Mayor Hales has referred to, a bold idea a chance. And sometimes I've asked him if he's going to switch that word to foolish at any point at 2 or 3 in the morning as we're walking around, but he's continued to stay consistent with the bold idea. And I've appreciated Mayor Hales' leadership on this.
By the way, I just want to make a standing objection. This man works very hard. And if in his free time he chooses to be in Old Town Chinatown going to bars till 2 in the morning, frankly, it's none of my business. You guys can keep mentioning it, but I don't judge him. I do not judge this man.
Commissioner Fish, in response to that, I just wanted to tell, I was telling my colleagues that I was excited about my first time up at council. I get to talk about the mayor going bar hopping.
So I did greatly appreciate the leadership and the company and as well as Commissioner Fritz and the conversations we were able to have. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Commissioner.
In support of this project. I'd also like to say that, you know, although, and I will present my belief and passion that this is a good idea to go forward, I've benefited greatly personally and professionally. I've learned about a part of the city that I've come to really appreciate and know a lot better through this process. And it has made me, I think, a more effective precinct commander. It'll make me a better public servant for the city through the relationships mentioned both internally with the members of the panel here, and as Chad mentioned, I'm much more educated on that part of town and the diversity that it represents from a historical perspective, from a race perspective, from social justice, and all the other things that go on down there. I'm not sure we could have picked a more challenging area to try and bring a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week management project together, but it's been fascinating. And so I've benefited and appreciated this opportunity very much. When I came to Central Precinct in September of 2010, and began to look at the entertainment detail and the assignment that we've given that area for several years, where we have a number of officers and a sergeant patrolling a specific area of town on certain given nights, usually Thursday, Fridays, and Saturdays, began to consider just the best use of our resources. And when you looked at the calls for service and the incidents related to events occurring, it was absolutely necessary. But the phrase I like to use is I believe everybody's working very hard, but are we working efficiently? Are we maximizing our resources in the right place at the right time? So I'd gone to the detail and the supervisor and asked them to begin to take a look around the country to see what's being done in similar type areas. We actually sent some of the detailed officers up to Seattle and Vancouver, B.C. We did some research over the internet. We contacted other agencies and found some ideas that we brought forward and were presented to me, and I ran with them last fall, and that's how we got to where we are today. So I'd just like to recap with just a few slides some of the numbers and things that we've discovered in this process. If I get the right, excuse me here, do you want to do that? Oh, there we go. So this is just a basic map of the area. Examines, you know, the calls for service, criminal offenses inside and adjacent to the downtown entertainment zone, 10 p.m. Friday until 3 a.m. on Sunday. We exclude New Year's Eve in this particular methodology simply because that's kind of a unique night, isn't always reflective of a traditional weekend for us, and it doesn't always fall on the weekend. And during the 90-day pilot project, we did identify some days, for example, Fat Tuesday, St. Patrick's Day, as other days that we wanted to try the street closure out, because those are referred to as, you know, popular nights in some of the bar districts. But typically, it's a Friday, Saturday night event where we go from 2nd to 4th and from Burnside down to Everett. If you take a look here at, you know, police calls for service, we have self-initiated and dispatch calls. And you'll see that essentially in the dispatched area, they're fairly similar from 2012-2013. Self-initiated, you can see a tremendous increase. And then if you look at the next box down there, where it talks about the most common call types, person contacts, traffic stops, and disturbance priorities. And the reason for the significant increase, I believe, remember this is the same time period we're looking at in 2012 versus what we did this year in 2013, you know, really allows for the high visibility that we had been seeking all along, and the removal of the cars, getting the cars out of the area, removing the traffic. It allows, you know, these four officers and the sergeant to be much more present to see for a couple of blocks in each direction, and I believe that's what leads to the higher amount of individual police contacts. And obviously those are recorded. This information, a large amount of it, the individual contacts are recorded through what we call the CAD system, where an officer may say, I'm out talking to somebody here or talking to somebody here. Doesn't necessarily reflect that there's been an incident that's occurred. As a statement in the box off to the right there, where, you know, one of our officers assigned there mentioned that, you know, this being able to see the entire area allows her to intervene more quickly before volatile situations get out of control. So been a substantial number of police contacts, and And I would argue that those are not always negative either. Sometimes we just assume if there's a police interaction, it's on a negative level. I think the mayor and commissioner can attest that we had a lot of very positive, unique contacts when we were out. I still haven't seen that photo on Facebook, thankfully.
I have to tell the story. We had a group of teenagers come up, and I thought that they were going to be going to the mayor because that was what was happening routinely. They ran to Commander Day, and can we take a picture of you kissing me, says this girl. And the commander rightly looked at the mayor and me, and then they amended it to, could she kiss you? And so the mayor gave his assent, and it was a scavenger hunt, and they were, but it was delightful to see that was the attitude. They can't have been teenagers because they were out bar hopping, so they must have been young 20s. But that was the attitude of their approach to the police officer, was not at all the feared enemy, but rather, and furthermore, Commander Day told me this is not at all it's a situation that occurs more often than not.
Right. My wife still doesn't believe me, but I told her that actually, you know, somebody did ask.
I just put it on the record
Thank
for you.
We
got your back on that.
That's right. So we have, you know, this is a detail that has a high number of person contacts regularly, and that's intentional. This is a proactive group of officers that have taken great ownership, and this program is really to their credit and the efforts that they've made to try and improve in public safety. If you look at offenses and criminal cases, and the reason those numbers differ, and there's a note down there at the bottom, it talks about how you have offenses and then you have criminal cases. So you can have a criminal case with a couple different offenses in it. For example, you can have a criminal case that involves disorderly conduct and trespass. That'd be two offenses, one case. So just break that down a little bit. Still, you can see there's a substantial decrease in the numbers from 11, 12, and 13. These are, you know, the primary calls that we dealt with in relation to kind of the overall stats. And, you know, the couple of numbers that I really am most pleased about that I think have really the greatest emphasis for support of this ongoing, and you look at the top few, aggravated assaults are where there's a serious injury or a weapon had been involved in some sort. In 3 in 2011, 5 in 2012, and we had 0 for the same time period in 2013. And if you drop down to simple assaults, which we would categorize as your kind of classic bar fight or, you know, street fight, you know, you're looking at 10 versus 17 the year before. And disorderly conduct, which is really a large category for us in terms of the entertainment district, it's kind of a catch-all for just inappropriate behavior. And it also is probably one of the charges that puts us at also a great risk of conflict with people. We have to take people into custody, and disorderly conduct is not a high governmental interest crime. And as you know, the organization, we are striving hard for our officers to, you know, review when they use force, when they take action, you know, what's the benefit, what's the gain, what's the governmental interest. And disorderly conduct, you know, is essentially one of those that's a low-level crime but requires police interaction. If we can reduce those contacts and those types of arrests, and I think we can go a long ways in reducing, you know, some of the force that's required and taking people into custody. We do see a slight increase there in DUI arrests. I think there's a couple of reasons for that. You know, one, we have changed the streets around a little bit, so that's challenged some of the drivers, which has brought them to our attention a little bit more. Also, although I have officers assigned to that area specifically regularly, you know, there's a high amount of interest and effort by officers that are not assigned to the detail but work down there on 5th and 6th and so forth. These DUI arrests, you know, are either occurring on 4th or 2nd Avenue and not specifically in the closure. So finally, in the conclusion, overall, we see a 27% decrease in offenses and about a 33% reduction overall in criminal cases in this same area compared to 2012, and similar down, you know, substantially compared with the time period in 2011. You know, the public safety, obviously, is what I do. I'm in my 24th year of service with the Police Bureau. This project has really changed some of the way that I think and look at my job in terms of not only as a responsible for public safety and its role in Central Precinct, but also as we approach this, learning from the community, learning from the businesses, and that public safety has a piece of this. They're a key cornerstone component, but there's a lot more going on here besides just that. And I've really appreciated the opportunity to kind of carry this forward. I would encourage us to continue to go down this road and build on this concept, but also, you know, develop many of the ideas that Chad spoke of And I know that Mike and Sarah will also address, so thank you.
I think if you look at those numbers, if you look at that huge increase in the number of contacts between officers and citizens, and then this fading of mayhem, you know, if you want to look at those categories like
right.
disorderly conduct and assaults as a good definition of that, that to me seems like the essence of community policing. We've got lots of interactions between police officers and the folks in the district and less crime.
Right.
So I'm really, you know, the statistics tell part of the story. Being on the street, sensing the atmosphere and seeing those contacts in person reinforced that for me.
Right. Thank you.
And to a certain extent, I think that this pilot project is misnamed, that it's not so much the entertainment district as the safety district.
Mm, yes.
And that's why we're doing this, is to reduce the conflicts between vehicles and people in small spaces, because the entertainment as such is largely still associated with alcohol consumption.
Correct. Thank you.
Commander?
Sarah, oh, go ahead.
Oh, yes, sir.
Are you at all concerned that closing it to vehicles had any effect on the dramatic increase in the number of forgeries from 2012 to 2013?
Can't make that connection right now, but
just curious.
We'll take a look at it.
Sarah, just push the button there. There you go.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Council. So my name is Sarah Schooley. I work for the Portland Bureau of Transportation in the Parking Operations Group. And I'm here just to talk a little bit about PBOT's role in this, some of our lessons learned, and what we should think about as we move forward with this pilot project. So first, just thinking about PBOT's role, PBOT really came into this pilot project as an operational assistant. And so we were here to help the police plan a traffic or plan a street closure and also implement the parking enforcement side of things. The program has evolved quite a bit since it first started. A lot of it was because it kind of kept getting extended, and so the plan that we had needed to change a little bit to account for that. And so right now, how the evolution of the plan works is that PBOT is once again in charge of purely the enforcement piece, but the police are actually the ones who are implementing the closure. And it seems to be working right now as far as efficiency of resources. So that's kind of changed, and I think we'll be playing around with that a little bit more as the pilot project extends. The second piece I want to talk about is the parking signage. Chad alluded to this a little bit at the beginning of the discussion, but I just wanted to walk you through the evolution of our signage. So when we first started, we put up some permanent signs, and so just the typical white signs that would be on posts that say when you can park and when you can't park. At the beginning of the project, we also used temporary parking signs to bring attention to the closure. So these temporary signs were the orange delineators you might have seen out there. They're just kind of poles that people would run into pretty much as they stepped out of their car. And so it was another way of alerting them that there's something a little different about the block that they're parked on. So a couple weeks into the closure, we took away those temporary signs and started relying mostly on permanent signage. So let me show you a little graph to show you what happened. So what this graph shows is the type of signage that we used, and then in relation to the number of tows that happened. And so at the beginning, you can see that the first couple weeks, people just didn't really know what was going on. I think as Chad alluded to, there's a little bit of confusion as to kind of when you can and when you can't be out of that area. And so those first couple weeks, we were really trying to figure out how to properly communicate this. Those delineators, as you can see, definitely helped more because it was just a lot of signage in people's faces than signs that they weren't used to looking for. So we brought the delineators back for a weekend to just kind of confirm whether or not they were useful. As you can see from the graph, it sure dropped that number quite a bit. But we can't continue the delineator use through PBOT just because we simply don't have enough delineators. As we get into construction season, we're using these delineators throughout the city for other construction projects. So one tactic that we have discussed since the beginning of the project but has recently kind of come into play is working with the businesses to encourage A-board signage. And so the businesses and also the county chipped in some funding for a couple, have put up A-board signage that describes when you can park and when you can't park. And so the orange triangles here show when the A-boards were used. And as you can see, that's done a pretty effective job at keeping the toes down. Still think there's some additional communication that needs to happen, but it looks like we're going in the right direction. So then the next thing I want to talk about is the current parking situation. So as I said before, PBOT was initially brought into the project because of the actual closing of the street and changing of parking regulations. But we realized that we also manage one of the potential funding opportunities, which is parking. Currently, there is no on-street parking charge after 7 p.m., and as such, any individual enjoying the entertainment district that parks on the street does not pay for parking. That said, there are a number of private lots around the entertainment district that are usually near capacity on Friday or Saturday nights. So people are paying for parking, they're just not paying us for parking. So the City of Portland owns a smart park garage at First and Davis, which is right outside the entertainment district. So you can see the entertainment district are the beige streets in there. The smart park is that circle. But that smart park garage actually has about 50% occupancy on Friday and Saturday nights. So we have plenty of room for people. But one thing that's hindering us a little bit right now is that the signs that are there to get you to the smart park are kind of blocked by the street closures. So if you're going there around that time of night, you might not see those signs to get you to the right place at the right time. So as the pilot project extends, we'll be looking at creating additional signage and better placement of signage to communicate how to get to the smart park. The other use of this chart and kind of the topic of the slide here shows evening parking, area used for revenue modeling. And one of the other kind of issues of this project, or one of the points of the project that Chad alluded to, is the sustainable funding of this. As we, you know, put forth this project, it was very much a pilot project, and we were just kind of using existing resources to get it going. But if we want this to be a sustainable project, we also have to look at sustainable funding. And parking has been brought up as one of those opportunities. So I just wanted to give you a little taste of what using funding for sustainable, or what using parking for sustainable funding would look like. So we did a little rough estimating over at PBOT and found that in this area that has the purple line on it, if we extended paid parking at $160 an hour until 10 p.m., we would just meet the revenue that we need to continue the closure. And so that's basically to fund a contractor to close off the street so that PBOT could do the parking enforcement, the police could do the police work, and not have to worry so much about being flaggers or bringing barricades in. Now, another part of the project that has been brought up is improving the aesthetics of the area and just also kind of creating more of an entertainment district than purely a closure. And so if we wanted to do that, if we wanted to find additional funds for that, we would have to look either beyond that 10 p.m. or at a different rate. And when we think about this, I think that 10 p.m., it's kind of an interesting time to think about if you're talking about increasing parking rates, because the people that would actually be benefiting from the entertainment district probably don't show up until about 11 p.m. or midnight. And so there's this difficulty in trying to figure out when, if you are going to use parking, when to use parking, and kind of to whom you use parking on with paid parking. I know that we've talked a little bit in some staff meetings about the opportunity of potentially starting parking later in the evening, maybe having a gap, but I just want to encourage or to advise against that given the communication issues of kind of having this gap in funding and having people expect not to have to go to the parking meters and pay. So I just wanted to put those options out there as we further our discussions on this, that parking is definitely a potential revenue resource, but I think we need to think a little bit deeper about how to implement it before we go forward on it. So with that, I'll turn it over to Mike from the Office of Neighborhood Involvement.
Thank you, Sarah. My name is Mike Boyer. I'm a Crime Prevention Program Coordinator for the Office of Neighborhood Involvement. I've served in this capacity for the past 4.5 years, and I have to say this particular project that I've been involved in is definitely one of the most intriguing and challenging assignments for a lot of the issues that Commander Day spoke to in regards to the diversity of the neighborhood and the various challenges they face. My piece in this project has really been focused around the community aspects of it, outreach and collaboration with the community. I've had a tremendous amount of support from Patrick Owen, also with the Office of Neighborhood Involvement, who's put together a number of the maps and slides and surveys, so I want to thank Patrick for his help. and efforts throughout the project. We've been involved in this project since its inception around late August, early September, and since then we've had an ongoing partnership with the Old Town Chinatown Community Association. We've used their forum to provide regular updates for the community, seek further input, and also solve problems as it develops. In addition to those regular meetings